our moral, our narrative, our goal, our platform. Salam Media, our humanity.
This is News and Views on Salam Media, and we are now traveling to Kashmir, where we'll be speaking to a social activist based in Kashmir. His name, Ala Fazli. We welcome him to the program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Brother Ala.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi, Ibrahim.
Yes, jazakumullah khairan so much for your time. And I know, and I've read, and maybe you can also tell us a little more. It was a very difficult Eid, a very difficult Eid for the people of Kashmir because of the curfew. Is the curfew still in place at this point in time as you and I are speaking?
Yes, for your information and for your listeners, I would like to say that it is second Eid here, and it is around 30 this time now. Yesterday it was the first Eid, and it was like in the history of Kashmir, it was the first time that whole of the Kashmir was placed under strict curfew. It was almost a military siege, which I not even call it a curfew. It was a military siege, and people were not allowed to go to the mosques, for that matter, Eidgah. There were no large congregations for Eid prayers. People were subjected to pray in the small village level or locality level mosques. And after that, when people came out, they were fired upon, and there was use of pellet shotguns, there was use of bullets as well as tear gases. And during the day, we received around, three people have been killed, and around 40 to 50 have been injured. And even women were beaten who had gone to the mosque for Eid prayers.
Yes. Now, together with that, this Eid is normally a different one. You know, there are two of them. This one, we normally slaughter, and make qurbani and so forth. You know, has that also to a certain extent been curtailed? We believe many of the shepherds and people coming with their stock of sheep and that couldn't be, because of the curfew, you could not be able to get all of that. Was that also curtailed? Was there a problem in going out to do qurbani?
Yes, absolutely. There was a lot of, because the basic issue with the qurbani was, it is now 67 day here when I'm talking to you, and for the first 55 days it has been the strict curfew here, and since after that it has been completely closed shops, so there were not much sheep available to the people as well, and even they couldn't go out and buy the sheep, and the people who have bought it in the, we had some reports from rural areas that the forces have stopped from them buying the sheep as well, and then even they could go for the sacrifice. It was only at the very local level. They couldn't go because people have been now, as per some reports in local newspaper yesterday, it was reduction to the 20% of what would earlier had been on Eid, the sale of sacrifice animal. I mean qurbani. So, and after that, they couldn't move out so that they can distribute it, the Eid, this qurbani meat as well. So, because there is complete curfew. So, if somebody is doing qurbani, he is just distributing it among the neighbors there only, because he cannot visit relatives or friends or for that matter any other person.
Yes. Now, Brother Ala, we believe that this was the first time in 26 years that have gone past where this curfew was set up. Just give us some idea. What is a curfew like? What happens? What are you people supposed to be doing? What are the laws pertaining to a curfew just in one day? You know, starting from the morning, what basically happens?
Yes, well, in the morning, after before the morning prayers, or after really immediately after the adhan for the fajr, these police and CRPF, I mean the paramilitary forces, they will start a deployment, and their gypsies and buses will roam around the localities, and they will there'll be an public address system, audio system, where they will continue to announce now it is for the information of every person living in this locality that you are now under curfew, you cannot move out till for the others. You cannot come out for any person. And if it is just there are some, if at some places they have just shoot at sight orders as well, and then you cannot go out by like bakers are closed in the morning. Yesterday I tried to get some bread for my we don't have bread at our home, so I just wanted to visit the local bread maker. So I will know he there was these policemen there outside. They don't know the bread shop's closed. He has been we have asked him to close at 6 in the morning. So it is like you cannot go out buy bread, buy milk, buy any other essential commodity. Sometimes it is difficult to get the baby food for your children. So it is and maybe by evening they will allow children to move out if the situation is like, if it has not been worse. So more or less they can curtail your movement completely. You cannot go out, you cannot drive, you cannot and even if it is a curfew situation like that, you cannot use even phone, because yesterday they have around stopped the communication of 25 million phones as well. So it is completely a blanket ban on the use of communication. And the phone, from the phone which I am using just now, it is the official communication line which is called BSNL. On other private, these communication providers or prepaid mobile holders, they are all closed. You cannot call to them. And it is only this line, it is really restricted to a few people, this kind of phone which I am using and talking to. You just can. And in the same way, they just get your internet down, and yesterday they brought the landline internet. The mobile internet is already down for last 66 days, and now yesterday, from yesterday, you don't have any landline internet available as well.
Yes. What is the purpose of, you know, removing all of this? Because I see in the report that Airtel, Aircel, Vodafone, Reliance, Telecom, all of them has been shut down, and the only one is BSNL, the one you are using to talk to us right now. But at the end of the day, what is the purpose of it? Are they trying to completely cut off communication, totally frustrating? Why are they doing this?
I think the communication gap which they are creating and increasing day by day. So I believe the increase and intense communication gap which they have now started from 2 days back, like all the phones are now dead and internet is down, I think they are going to start a very strong action against this people's uprising, which has been here now for the last 67 days. The people are out on roads, men, women, youth and children, demanding a referendum. And this uprising started after the killing of Commander Burhan Wani, who was a very popular resistance leader and a youth icon. When I say resistance, resistance is here the people who are demanding referendum for the future of this Kashmir, whether it should be where they will decide about their future, and they believe, the Kashmiris believe that this is an illegal Indian occupation here, so they are struggling and resisting against that occupation, and it is now the third people's uprising after 2008, 2010, and then it, now it is 2016 uprising, where people and masses are out on roads, and they are demanding the referendum. So to stop now, because for the last 67 days they have put people under curfew, they have killed around 82 people. There have been the use of these bullets and shotguns, pellet shotguns, where 13,000 people have been injured, and you have more than 820 people who have been shot in their eyes, and they are now blind, and around 80 to 100 are which have been shotgunned in both the eyes, pellet shotgun, and then there are pellet injuries. It is actually, I would like to remind, this pellet gun is actually used for hunting in other parts of the world, but here it is used on unarmed protesters to stop them coming out and demanding a referendum. And there have been around 300, more than 300 pellet injured people with pellet injuries. And it is continuous. So it is completely a war-like situation here. And I think to make a much more intense crackdown here on people, I think Government of India is planning much more intense crackdown, and that is why they have now completely created a communication barrier between the people living here in Kashmir and outside world.
Yes. Now, if we go and try to find out now as far as the resistance is concerned, you know, with the issue of the many separatist leaders, you know, the all parties Hurriyat conference, and they on the one side, of course, a lot of them has had house bans like Miwaz, Umar Farooq and Ali Shah Jilani and so forth. And but I want to know the role that the political leaders, you know, are playing, especially Mehbooba Mufti and some of the people. The last two or three weeks, there was a delegation that came down, all parliament delegation that came down from India, and basically they weren't given a very, you know, a wonderful response from especially the APHC and so forth. But now, at this point in time, Allah, what about the leaders that you have that are in a political recognized leaders? What about them and their response to all this that is happening?
It's a very long question. I would like to break it into some parts so that I can answer it in correctly. First, when we talk about the resistance leadership, which actually comprises of all parties Hurriyat conference, and this time it is a joint resistance leadership, which comprises of Saeed Ali Gilani, the symbol, which is known as here as symbol of resistance, and then there are these young two leaders, Mirwais Mauli Umar Farooq, and also the Yasin Malik. So they are the people who are actually giving these protest programs and calendars to the people, and then people are religiously following those calendars for the last 67 days. And I think when we come to the political initiatives which have been taken, I think it was the Saeed Ali Gilani who came, I think only on the fourth or fifth day of this. The present uprising, she came up with a 6-point agenda, which she has also given to the Government of India in 2010. And Saeed Ali Gilani has asked this document was even sent to the P5 countries. When I say P5, it is the Permanent Security Council members, and it was sent to the China as well, Iran as well, and Turkey as well, and it was also sent to the SAR countries, where Saeed Ali Gilani has asked them that India should be restrained from using, and there should be a pressure put on India for its rights violations, and which include both the fundamental right of right to self-determination as well as human rights violation which India has been doing here in Kashmir. So they have asked for they are ready for even any kind of dialogue on the issue of Kashmir, but India should first be serious and accept these six confidence building measures, where they have called for that India should accept Kashmir is a dispute, and accept its disputed nature and the people's right to self-determination. Then they have asked, Saeed Ali Gilani has asked also that India should start the demilitarization under the incredible international monitoring, because when we say it is the highest militarized area or region in whole of the world, even much more militarized than Afghanistan, Iraq, or for that matter any other conflict region. So then there are the release of prisoners, political prisoners, and then also repealing those draconian laws like AFSPA, which give impunity to these Indian forces here for doing any kind of violation here, and then they are not convicted for any of such act. But on part of the Government of India, there has been no such engagement, which we can see, which has been a kind of a credible engagement or a considerable engagement, where it would be taken that Government of India is serious about for any kind of resolution. I think they are using only two ways. They are coming through two ways. Either they are coming through the violence, where they are killing, blinding, maiming, and injuring the people here who are asking for referendum, or they are coming through these farce dialogue initiatives, what we call those backdoor entries like APD. When APD came here, all parties delegation, they haven't come up with any kind of clear mandate or the agenda. It was just, I don't know why now Government of India is saying that the APHC or Gilani, Saeed Ali Gilani rejected the dialogue. Although there has been never any official invitation from Government of India. It was just a personal gesture from some of the people who wanted to meet Gulani, as they have met him in 2010 as well. But in that time, after 2010, now it is 16, there has been no concrete or any substantial improvement on part of India. So it was the same this time. They had come, now they are saying, the India is saying that APS Saeed Ali Gulani rejected the dialogue, which actually never came from them. And or they are blaming them for rejecting their personal gestures, which I don't find. It was this kind of without any clear agenda or without any clear mandate. It is just like to discredit the resistance leadership among their own people. And the irony is that for international for the people outside India, India tells them to these international people and bodies and forums that it is a bilateral issue between India and Pakistan. But then to Pakistan, India says it is our internal matter. And when it comes to internal matter here, they are saying, no, we are not going to talk to anybody. So I think the onus of all this lies actually on India, because they are not ready to accept any, and they are coming only through the way of violence to deal with the people of Jammu and Kashmir.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Brother Ala, you clearly explained now the situation they find themselves in. All right, for us now outside of Kashmir to understand, what then is the role of Pakistan in all of this? Because we know where India is, and perhaps India are not interested, you know, in the plebiscite, in going for that referendum. So, all right, let's start off first by you explaining the role of Pakistan. And then, secondly, telling us what is it exactly yourself and the Kashmiri people, together with the rest, with the APHC and so forth, what are you asking for? What are some of your critical demands?
Well, I think let's come to the second part of your question. First, that is what people of Kashmir demand. I think it is completely clear, and people of Kashmir on roads, they have made it completely clear that they don't want to be part of India. But still, they want that it should be decided through a very legitimate democratic process, where people should be allowed to vote in a referendum, where they will decide whether they want to live with India or not. So I think this is the absolutely clear demand. And before this, it has been all the way India has tried to start and come here. So what are the demands? So they have tried to shift this discourse to human rights violations and other things, and like development, and for that matter, roads, building and employment for the youth. So all the time they have been trying to give an impression that these uprisings here in Kashmir are for even law and order situation here in Kashmir, and we are dealing with. But I think this time this people's uprising has transcended all those things which India has been trying to tell internationally people that this is a local law and order situation in Kashmir. And they made it abundantly clear this time. They are not demanding the end of human rights violation. They are not demanding roads. They are not demanding buildings. They are not demanding employment for the youth. What they are demanding, and what they are demanding very clearly, is that they demand a referendum here in Kashmir so that they will decide their future. So it was the second part. And when we come to the first part, when we say that how the Pakistan should do, I think uprising from the day second or third, Pakistan has been very much actually engaged on many fronts, like diplomatic front and, for that matter, international front, and Pakistan, even from the highest of Pakistani government, like Prime Minister of Pakistan, he has been regularly giving statements and briefing. And then Pakistan also called all those ambassadors and had a meeting there, and they have envoy in the United Nations have been also talking. And I think there has been a little bit of pressure which Pakistan has created on international level and as well as a diplomatic level. But I think those are the engagements which are there, and people in Kashmir have actually acknowledged those engagements, that no, Pakistan is there very much on ground working for it. But I think when we talk of substantial engagement, I think Pakistan has to try to engage with the neighboring countries as well as the friends like China and other countries like who are or even in the West, like they have to start lobbying with countries like United States or for that matter Britain or France, Germany or even Russia, so that this resolution can be brought in, again in Security Council in United Nations, where which has been now I think because the basis of this people movement, and there are fundamentally around 18 resolutions in the United Nations which ask for India that the right to celibate mission should be given Kashmir.
Let's look at the map. Let's look at the map and just describe the map to us. How many regions is Kashmir, Jammu and Kashmir basically divided into? How many regions?
I think the issue is the whole of Jammu and Kashmir, which existed in 1947, is a dispute. So the region which is under India, it is also a dispute nature, or which is under Pakistan, what we call here Azad Kashmir, the region under Pakistan, that is also of the dispute. And this referendum or this right to self-determination is for the whole of the Jammu and Kashmir. It is not only for the this region where we are resisting and where we are struggling, which we call Indian occupation of that Kashmir, but this right to self-determination is for all other parts of Kashmir as well. And that is when we say right to self-determination, it will be the people's decision, people's choice, that what they want their future. When it comes to the region which is under Pakistan, what we call Azad Kashmir, and Azad Kashmir is in a constitutional arrangement with the government of Pakistan till the plebiscite is held in, or till the plebiscite is agreed by India. When it will be the plebiscite, it will not be only for the Indian occupied Kashmir, it will be also for Azad Kashmir and Gilgit-Baltistan as well. So, and because of that constitutional arrangement which Azad Kashmir has with Pakistan, they have their separate president, prime minister, they have separate judiciary, and even they have separate flag. Otherwise, they couldn't have, there cannot be two presidents in the same country, two prime ministers in the same country, or two flags in the same country. But it's only under that constitutional arrangement which Pakistan has never denied. Pakistan has never denied the right to self-determination. I think that is the point where Pakistan is morally higher, on a higher platitude than India, because they say that even for Azad Kashmir, the people will be given right to self-determination, and it is the same for here in Jammu and Kashmir. And then the other region is Ladakh, which is a part of this Indian occupied territory. So, and even within this region which is under Indian occupation, you have Kashmir Valley, you have Chenab Valley, which you call the area outside the Kashmir Valley, but which is a Muslim dominated, and then you have the Jammu region as well, which comprises of 2.5 districts, where and I think this Kashmir Valley and Chenab Valley, and from the far-flung areas, this the present uprising is throughout going on.
Yes. Now, the line of control, the LOC, that is dividing Azad and Jammu and Kashmir. Is that all that area? Where are your Indian government soldiers based? Because we believe you had close to 750,000 of these military people there. Where are they based?
Well, they are based all over. They are not only on this line of control, what they call, or ceasefire line, which it is actually, because the line of control is actually a ceasefire line. So they are not only on the borders of from this side. They are in all the civilian areas as well. You can find at every nook and corner in every locality. You will find Indian troops and Indian paramilitary troops. They have camps all over onward the Kashmir, be it villages, be it towns, be it markets, be it even stationed in schools, school buildings and government buildings, and they are everywhere. It is not like they are restricted to the only border or border side areas.
Yes. At this point in time, Brother Azli, which are the most affected areas in Jammu and Kashmir? Is it the entire area, or would it be concentrated around Srinagar and some of the other more built-up areas, or is it right across your curfews and everything? Is this going right across the rest of Jammu and Kashmir?
Yes. Well, it is actually this time it is the whole of the Kashmir Valley, excluding the Jammu part, but the Chenab Valley is also under, Chenab Valley is also affected, but not as to that extent as Kashmir Valley is. It is, I think, the whole of the 10 districts of the Kashmir are affected, but the overall, the curfew is throughout the Kashmir Valley, but in all these 2.5 months now, the most affected areas when we in terms of killings and in terms of injured and in terms of it has been the south of Kashmir. South of Kashmir comprises of around five districts, which is Kulgam, which is Pulwama, which is Shopian, which is Islamabad, and which is Tral. These have in the south of the Kashmir Valley. These districts have been most affected in terms of killings and in terms of people injured and in terms of people arrested or in the terms of people who have been blinded by pellet guns. So this area, and then in the north, it has been mostly Kopwara, Baramulla, Bandipora, and Sopor, which have been most affected. And in the central of the Kashmir, it has been Badgam and Srinagar as well.
So it's quite a number of places in around the area of Kashmir itself. So at this point in time, the curfew is very much in place still, and tremendous amount. Finally, Brother Azli, we wanted to talk about the issue of the persecution of the people in this particular respect of the use of pellet guns and everything. But one specific issue that's very troublesome is the type of abuse on women. Is this something that is very concerning for you people, also the residents of Kashmir itself? What can you tell us? Is that a very concentrated, orchestrated, issue of going to especially, harm and abuse women from some of these military people and also the people that are in the area?
I think, I believe when we talk about the women in Kashmir, India has used the violence against women, not only the normal violence, but also the sexual violence against women as a tool to suppress the uprising here, or to suppress the morale of people here who are fighting and resisting against Indian rule here. So it is not the first time Indian troops have attacked women. They have all along for these last 20 years especially. There have been a number of cases of where Indian troops have subjected the women here into mass rape, and even gang rapes have been perpetrated on women here. And then, as per some reports, more than 7,000 women have been molested by Indian troopers here. And even for that matter, they have been abused. And it is a very, under this militarization effect, the effect of militarization is such that women are subjected to daily abuses, verbal abuses. It has become a kind of a normal thing, and it has affected them really psychologically, because it is there is really a number increase in the number of PTSD cases here in Kashmir, which was recently there was this report in recently issued by this Human Rights Watch, where they said 20% of the women are psychologically suffering because of this militarization effect. And it is, I think, government of India has used this sexual violence and as a tool here. And even during this uprising, there was, I think, on the, in the first month, there had been this attack on the women's rally here, where the pellet shotgun was used on women as well. And they had, there was, they were shot in their private parts, and we received some women with injuries where pellet shotgun, they had pellet injuries in their private parts. And yesterday also as well, there were many at, because the other thing of other side of the resistance that women have been part and parcel of this resistance, and they have been all time along with the men and youth and children of Kashmir on roads. So I think they, that is why they have been subjected to such brutality and such very actions by the Indian state.
Yes, brother Ala, I thank you so much for your time, for chatting to us. I want to be asking you very kindly in the future also to help us with having the latest developments out in Kashmir that we could report to the people around the globe as to what's happening there. But we certainly make lots and lots of dua for you people, and may Allah Ta'ala make it easy through all your difficulties, and one day you would be able to reach, you know, the, your fight that you have taken up for the freedom of the place of Kashmir and its people. Jazakallah khairan so much, brother Ala. But obviously, I want to ask you this morning to leave us with a message. Leave us with a message from your side, being in Kashmir itself. What are you telling the outside world this morning from your side?
Only message which I would like to, through your medium, to convey to the whole of the world, that India may have succeeded in killing us, torturing us, inflicting sexual violence on us, or destroying our property, that they have not succeeded in the killing of our dream, and that is the dream of freedom from India. And one fine morning, we all will wake up to the free to that sun of freedom, inshallah.
Ameen, inshallah.
And we are resisting till that day.
Shukran jazilan, jazakallah, brother Allah. Shukran, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That's right. He's a social activist based in Kashmir and gave us an extensive interview this morning in discussion about the latest development. The curfew is still in place. Eid was a very, very sad affair. In first time in 26 years when the curfew has been set again, they could not go to the Eidgah, perform Eid Salah, slaughter their Qurbani. Lots of difficulty and hardship there they go. And he clearly explained what it is like and the little opportunities they get sometimes to go and do a bit of shopping and then come back. But other than that, it is full time that they should be in there, because the violence meted out to them in terms of the pellet gun shooting and everything else. And yes, there's resistance. There's no doubt about that. They are certainly fighting back, and of course, this still continues all the time for India's somewhat, assumed or want to assume control of the place, knowing very well that there was a referendum called a plebiscite in 1947, and that hasn't been realized up to now.